Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. This show is for the week of August 2nd, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Disappointed, actually.
Disappointed. Well, I can't imagine why. Well, we'll ruminate about your disappointment here for a little while. I saw a tweet. Actually, it came from Blue Mass Group, right? Mm-hmm. A little while ago, and the tweet basically said, "Oh yeah, when you think about what the Massachusetts House of Representatives just did on the energy bill, put it in this context, and the context being an article from CNN saying that 2018 is on track to be the fourth hottest year on record, and the previous, the three hotter years than 2018 were 2015, 2016, and 2017. So that, in that context, where the Earth is warming, we have fire tornadoes out in California, we have forest fires in the tundra north of the Arctic Circle, we have people dying in Greece, et cetera, et cetera. The Massachusetts House of the Massachusetts House of Representatives and the Massachusetts Legislature slowly ground its way to completion of the session recently this week. So let me just set up the story, DR. You can just explain what happened. So over the course of the last 2 years, the climate hawks, climate activists in the Massachusetts legislature have been crafting clean energy bills. In particular, we think of Senator Mark Pacheco, who proposed something called the Act for a Clean Energy Future, which had many good provisions, many good provisions in it, and which he was able, through dint of having good piece of legislation and his political skills, he got to pass through the Massachusetts Senate unanimously. And in that bill, among the other good things that were in it, was a renewable portfolio standard increase, annual increase of 3%. Now, if on any of those names sound unfamiliar, you can go back to our previous podcast. This month, we've been all over the energy bill here in Massachusetts. We spoke with Senator Pacheco a few weeks ago. Last week, we spoke with Eugenia Gibbons about what the renewable portfolio standards is. But the short 25 words or less, even less than a Twitter, the renewable portfolio standard is a requirement to buy clean energy, and it sends what's called a market signal to people who want to build renewable energy stuff. And the higher the percentage of annual growth, the better off we all are. So recently, the Senate passed a bill, and then the Massachusetts House of Representatives passed what I'm seeing referred to as four pieces of legislation that sort of corresponded to the Senate bill. And then they all got into a committee and had a cup of coffee and looked out the window for a while. And with the intent of reconciling the House version and the Senate version, and tell me, DR, what happened when the sausage was finally made into a, the sausage was finally complete.
What happened is that they essentially blew it. They essentially whiffed and watered down the bill severely. We mentioned the issue of the renewable portfolio standard. The Senate wanted to increase the growth of clean energy added under the renewable portfolio standard to 3 points a year. The House only wanted to raise it to 2 points a year for a decade and then drop it back to 1 point a year after that. And the House the House mentality won in this compromise legislation. In addition, we still have idiotic caps on solar, which is another thing that makes absolutely no sense. A price on carbon was sidelined. It was basically, turned into a complete hot mess. And Blue Mass Group also notes that provisions regarding environmental justice were also thrown out. And as a result, it's basically a big nothing burger of a bill. There's one state legislature, I believe it's Representative Frank Smyth, who calls the bill in its current version terrible. So,
well, I guess I am not very happy. I'm quite disappointed, as a polite climate hawk should be. There are some readings I've said that say the bill So certainly what the bill could have been versus what we got is a terrible disappointment, right? It is, it's just, the state legislature did not aspire to be noble. And we can go into why the House was so recalcitrant and why it didn't do anything. But let me just tick off some of the things that actually get into the bill. When you list them, you can say, okay, that's pretty good, but we're not in a situation where pretty good cuts it anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway, let me just say what's in the bill that finally was reconciled between the House and the Senate and presumably will be passed by each and then go to the governor for his signature. The first and a good thing in this bill is something we talked about with Senator Pacheco is this idea of a demand charge. That is to say the utilities wanted to place on homeowners who had solar panels on their roof an extra kind of charge that was related to the peak energy they consumed. And basically what it meant was that the utilities could charge those people extra high rates to kind of make up for the fact that the solar panels were giving those people low rates. It was kind of an underhanded way to distort the system. And this bill basically read it out and told the, as the article says, the article from Mary Cerisi in Mass Live says it's the DPU and Eversource gets sent back to the drawing board to try again. So that's in the bill, better than nothing. It's a good thing. Second thing that the bill does is that, as you said, DR, it modestly, I guess is the right word, raises the renewable portfolio standard, which means that instead of the 3% a year that the Senate bill would have had, 3% increase in clean energy per year, which would have gotten us to 50% clean energy by 2030 and 100% clean energy by 2050. Instead, the House opted for 2% through the decade of the 20s and then go back to 1% a year in 2030. I mean, you look at that and say, why would they make a point of going back to a 1% rate of increase in 2030? It has to be to satisfy the demands of the utilities. I can't imagine any other reason to have this sort of arcane, you know, it's up for a while and it's down for a while and okay. It's just, it's like, I mean, are you going to deal with the problem or not, right? What do you got?
In other words, they went back to 1% to appease the 1%.
Okay, that is, though. Maybe that's why. Another thing I get in the bill that's pretty good is that they've actually asked the State Department of Energy to ask for another 1.6 gigawatts of wind power off the coast of Massachusetts, which is good. So now they're up to something like 3.2 gigawatts in total. So back in 2016, they requested 1.6 gigawatts. Now they've requested another 1.6 gigawatts. That's pretty good. One of the things that they did, they sort of punted on, was this idea of energy storage. So the House bill, and we talked about this in the past, but without repeating too much, the idea of having energy storage basically means you're having a big whomping battery someplace or somewhere to store electrical energy, so that when you need it, when there's on demand, when something is happening that requires a lot of electricity, you can tap into that stored power. Of course, the Senate bill had actual targets to build storage facilities, whereas the House, the thing that finally got through was to set a target. Okay, so there's a target to build some storage facilities. Not, again, that'll probably be aspirational as opposed to actually being compelled to build the storage units. Another thing that's in there is that, and this is a funky one, it's kind of a good idea. As you know, much of the carbon pollution that we generate now comes from those times when the demand for electricity is the highest. That is to say, the hottest days like today, where all the air conditioning is on and every power plant is going full bore and all of a sudden you need additional power. That's when they turn on these dirty peaker, what are called peaker plants, which match the peak of the electric demand. So what this bill does is to say to try to guide the industry to build renewable energies that can be used during those peak periods. And that's all well and good, but it turns out that the kind of renewable energy they envision is basically stuff like burning garbage during the peak power moments. And of course, burning the garbage is itself pretty much a source of carbon dioxide. So it's kind of this circular thing. But at least I guess it's in the bill, this idea that we should have renewable generation during times of high demand. And the last thing, which is a disappointment in the bill, is that it left the what are called the net metering caps. That is to say, there's a limit on how many photovoltaic systems can be set up that are allowed to put power on the grid and make money at it. Right? There's just this artificial limit, and the House bill and the final bill did not remove that limitation. And so we're losing jobs because the House didn't want to. Again, it seems to me the House appeased the utilities and kept the cap on the solar panels so that, that the utilities could run around and talk about natural gas pipelines, right?
So from that perspective, considering what it's going to do to the solar market, you can make a strong argument this is, in fact, job-killing legislation.
You could, absolutely. And I've seen reports that, up 3,000 jobs in solar energy here in the state, you know, in installation and whatnot, that have been lost because these jokers can't get themselves together to remove the net metering cap because it scares the bejesus out of Eversource, right? They don't want that competition. Not happy about it. But I guess
What's the difference between what these guys are doing in terms of economic disruption, what Trump is doing with his tariffs?
I think in one case, maybe here in Massachusetts, is driven by greed and corporate greed. And down in Washington, Donald Trump, whatever his motivation is, kind of like reading six fireflies in a glass jar, right? It's just random stuff he does, maybe. I don't know. But I guess the question I have is this. In Massachusetts, which is a reputed blue state, which prides itself on being this leader in all these issues, how come we can't get our legislature to take action on this? I mean, why is it that the legislature is still beholden to the Associated Industries of Massachusetts and Eversource to the extent that we have this kind of so-so legislation when we could have had nationwide leading legislation? Why do you think they didn't do it? I got an answer, DR.
Perhaps the voice of the shall we say the entrenched interests was stronger than the voice of the public that wanted action, and that has to change. Obviously, Emily Norton, the outgoing head of the State Sierra Club, says she quote, "I fully expect there will be electoral implications from what we have seen here today," unquote. And you do wonder if people, once they figure out how much of a scam this is, will decide to make some changes this November in terms of the composition, particularly of the Massachusetts House.
Well, I guess I would say, I have a slightly more nuanced statement. I agree with you that there has to be electoral consequences. But I think that the Massachusetts House in particular is structured in a way that gives the Speaker enormous power. Right. If the Speaker says jump, everybody's going to jump, or else they're going to end up with an office in the parking lot. Right. So the Speaker cracks the whip and stuff happens. And Mr. DeLeo obviously didn't want this bill. The other guy who seems to come out as some sort of bad guy in this is the head of the Ways and Means Committee. I think his name is
Jeff Sanchez,
who didn't want this. Right. And they hold all the cards. So, I mean, for example, my own rep is, I think, would be very much on board with the more aggressive policy, but the Speaker won't let the stuff come up. And and the question is, how do progressives and climate hawks get a voice? I mean, I guess I sometimes think in my head, and tell me if you would agree, DR, is that being a Democrat in Massachusetts is a little bit like being a communist in 1960s Russia. You had to go. You had to be a communist, right? You couldn't get anywhere if you weren't a communist. Here in Massachusetts, you're not going to get anywhere if you're a Republican, because it's so within the Democratic Party, there are wings that are not easily identifiable. There's more conservative wings and there's more liberal wings. And I think that progressives need to be quite explicit in their votes to make sure that the people they're voting for are committed to progressive legislation. I mean, there's stuff about the Safe Communities Act, right? There's all kinds of, there's the education funding for disadvantaged communities. I mean, all this stuff that's kind of getting slow walked through the House. I mean, we need to be looking at state representatives who affirmatively commit to progressive principles and will fight for those in the House. That's the only way you're going to break the power of and the speakership is a long entrenched, very powerful position, right? I mean, it's not, it's institutional. It's not the Leo.
Exactly. It's I'm having flashbacks to this, so the dictator like behavior of the former House Speaker Tom Finneran.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, and how long that went on and on and on and on until it finally ended. Of course, it ended in
with him in an orange suit, if I remember correctly.
There you
right.
go. But still.
So I don't know. I mean, I think that the most hopeful thing that I saw, I'll put it up, was a link, DR, actually you saw it, of Senator Mark Pacheco, who among any of us should be would be the most disappointed by what's actually fallen out. And he basically said when this session ends, he and his staff are going to go back and start putting together another bill to go back into the next session with an aggressive green energy bill. And so, I mean, I think between now and next time around, we need to elect people who are explicitly climate hawks. We need to and we need to be supporting this legislation all the way through. Right.
And we need to make sure that Roger Daltrey and Pete Townshend said, we don't get fooled again.
All right, so DR, we got to put it down there. That's the mixed news from the State House. We do have additional green legislation, not quite as good as it could have been. We'll put up a link to some of these. We'll put up a blog with some of these links at massclimateaction.org/blog, and you can check out the Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can listen to our show on almost any of the streaming services like Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Podbean, SoundCloud, etc. And of course, we're on Apple Podcast, where if you go, please give us a review. It matters more than you think. So we will close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. I guess I should start saying Massachusetts should put a long-term and equitable price on carbon as well, right?
Exactly, yeah. And the actions of some of our elected officials shouldn't be accepted as normal.
That's right. Anyway, thanks so much for being here, DR. Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.